Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, June 21st, 2017. A new report out today says an estimated 6 million South Sudanese struggle to find food.
If you go to market to look for food, if you don't have 150 or 200, you will not get food to eat unless you have 200 or 200 plus just to buy a meal.
And Amnesty International accuses South Sudan Army of burning villages and killing innocent civilians in Upper Nile.
We interviewed dozens of both victims and eyewitnesses to abuses in Abroch, the displacement camp, and at the UN's Protection of Civilians site. And civilians described government attacks on their towns and villages, deliberate killing of civilians.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A new report says food insecurity has worsened in South Sudan, with an estimated 6 million people, or half of the population of the country, struggling to find food in June and July. The head of South Sudan's National Bureau of Statistics says it is the highest level of food insecurity in the country's history. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
6 million South Sudanese are food insecure, according to the report out today. Many Juba residents say they can no longer afford to buy even one meal per day. Victoria Andrea, a mother of two, lives in Juba's Nyakuren West neighborhood. Speaking in Arabic, she says food is very expensive.
Sugar, vegetables, and flour are all expensive. Some families do not have enough money. They eat only one meal a day. Some even go hungry the whole day without a single meal to put on table.
Philip Deng, a resident of Juba's Gudele neighborhood, works as a security guard in the capital. Deng says he does not eat breakfast or lunch because he cannot afford to buy food at a restaurant.
If you go to market to look for food, if you don't have 150 or 200, you will not get food to eat unless you have 200 or 200 plus just to buy a meal.
The Integrated Food Security Phase Clarification, also known as the IPC scale, is a tool used to improve food security analysis and decision-making. The IPC report released today was compiled last month in South Sudan. National Bureau of Statistics Chief Isaiah Cholarway says hunger is spreading across the country.
The overall food security and nutrition situation has further deteriorated due to armed conflict, economic crisis, and below average harvests that were exhausted well before the ongoing lean season.
The former Jungle state is particularly at risk due to displacement caused by ongoing fighting, which prevents people from planting or harvesting crops. The report says acute food insecurity is spreading to the counties of Ayod, Kanal, Duk, Nirol, and Uror. More than 200,000 people in Ayod County are experiencing humanitarian catastrophe, according to the report. And it says South Sudan's most productive counties in Greater Equatoria, such as Yei, Lanya, Morobo, Kajukeji, and Magway, are all facing crisis and emergency levels of acute food insecurity due to conflict. Parts of the western bank of the Nile in former Upper Nile State are also facing emergency food insecurity, while the former northern Bahar Ghazal State is facing severe food insecurity. Joyce Luma, the UN World Food Programme's country director for South Sudan, says her organization is working with other aid agencies to roll back the spread of famine in former Unity State.
A huge humanitarian response has eased famine conditions and prevented famine from taking hold elsewhere and claiming more lives in Unity State. However, there are still just too many hungry people in South Sudan, and hence there is no room to ease down our efforts.
Mahimbo Ndowi, The UN Children's Fund representative in South Sudan says an estimated 1 million South Sudanese children are malnourished.
Even though the famine has gone, the number is very, very, very high. This year, UNICEF aims to target up to 700,000 children with 46 partners across the country.
Sergei Tissot, head of the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization in South Sudan, says there is no doubt the level of humanitarian assistance must be increased in South Sudan. But the real solution to food insecurity rests with the country's leaders.
Humanitarian support is only a temporary solution, but the long-term solution is peace in South Sudan and reactivation of the local production of food.
For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Another report, this one from Amnesty International, says tens of thousands of civilians in South Sudan's Upper Nile region have been forced to leave their villages by government forces who burned, shelled and looted their homes. Joanna Marina, Amnesty International Senior Crisis Response Advisor in New York, tells Ayen Bior that civilians in Upper Nile region reported that government forces and their allied militia carried out the offenses in Upper Nile.
During that offensive, tens of thousands of members of the Shilluk minority in South Sudan were forcibly displaced from their towns and villages. So right now, the region is largely empty of the civilian population. People have fled to Sudan. People are living in very difficult circumstances in displaced persons camps, and people are at the protection of civilian site in Malakal. But very few people now are living in their villages.
The report says that at least 40,000 people have fled to Abaruk. What are the conditions there? I understand that it's not a displacement camp.
It's not an official displacement camp. It's really just an ad hoc site that had some level of protection from government forces where people congregated. At the very height of the conflict in early May, there were some 40,000 people. That number has shrunk tremendously as people have fled to other areas, primarily Sudan. So right now, there are approximately 10,000 people living in very difficult circumstances because it just doesn't have the conditions to support that kind of population. There's very little water. The water that there is tainted. Because of that, they've already had an outbreak of cholera in May. And it's also very difficult for humanitarian organizations to bring in food. So there's a shortage of both food and water, obviously not easy for civilian life.
Now, you were just in the Upper Nile. You had a chance to speak directly with civilians there. What are they telling you personally?
We interviewed dozens of both victims and eyewitnesses to abuses in Abroch, the displacement camp, and at the UN's Protection of Civilians site. And civilians described government attacks on their towns and villages, deliberate killing of civilians, indiscriminate attacks, primarily shelling of civilian villages, but also a bombing in one case by an Antonov plane. They described systematic and massive looting. So once the attack was over, both government and militia forces just stole basically everything they could get their hands on in these towns and villages. So, you know, everything from furniture and even the doors off of homes to clothing and even people's food. The looting of people's food stores is especially important given the difficult humanitarian conditions. So it really makes it difficult for people to return to their homes when they don't have food to eat. We spoke to a number of elderly civilians. I mean, I guess one point that's important to make is that some number of elderly civilians were burned alive in their houses because, you know, people who are very old, people who are vulnerable, unable to walk, are not able to flee when the government's carrying out an offensive like this one. So they're left behind in their homes. And when those homes are shelled and burned, as we saw at a fairly massive level during this offensive, people die or burn to death inside their homes.
What needs to happen for atrocities as the ones that you have mentioned? What needs to happen for us to bring an end to them?
I mean, most importantly, of course, the onus is on the government of South Sudan to rein in its forces. It needs to discipline its forces. It needs to punish those forces that carry out these kinds of abuses. But given the situation where you have these undisciplined forces carrying out systematic atrocities, we're also calling on UN peacekeepers to increase their efforts to protect civilians. What we'd like to see is UN peacekeepers deploying in some of these areas where civilians are very much at risk, and specifically in this area of Upper Nile, where at present it's very difficult for civilians to return to their towns and villages.
That's Joanne Marina, Amnesty International's Senior Crisis Response Advisor. She was speaking with Ayen Bior from New York earlier today. The South Sudan military is dismissing Amnesty International's report. Deputy spokesman for South Sudan Army calls the report baseless. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Deputy SPLA spokesperson Colonel Santo Domich Chol calls the Amnesty report biased and meaningless, saying it aims to tarnish the South Sudan's image. He denies government forces looted, killed, or destroyed property of South Sudanese civilians.
This report, I read it, and it's completely biased. It is trying to mobilize oppositions against the government, and we know the end result. Most of the reports or the particles of the reports here are the opinions of oppositions like Lamakol and the rest.
Domich says, in the past, Amnesty International has written similar reports about the situation in South Sudan, but failed to convince the international community about what is happening in the country.
These are just scenarios being created by Amnesty International because it has failed in its efforts to mobilize genocide in South Sudan. Since it has actually failed in genocidal operations, by maybe instigating the situation so that people go for that, it has left with no options other than creating such rumors or such unfounded allegations. So this is a complete biased report.
Domich further claims the eyewitnesses Amnesty International interviewed for the reports are not credible, calling them opposition sympathizers.
If it is actually an international body that keeps an eye closer to all the human rights issues worldwide, then it has to come down to the government of the Republic of South Sudan and share all these things. But it is like campaigning. It is like propaganda. Then the opposition. Now they are behaving like opposition.
Domich warns the people who call themselves experts on South Sudan against inserting what he calls propaganda into their work and advises them to consult government officials if they want to report accurately on what is happening in the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Pope Francis pledges to support South Sudan. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you like your natural hair, or do you use artificial hair or straighteners?
What makes me to use artificial hair is that my hair doesn't grow very fast, so I want to have that long hair also to look like others, you know?
I can't use artificial because it is not what I've made up of. So I'm made up of my natural hair, so there's no way of copying what I don't have.
Well, right now I'm carrying artificial hair, but then I love my natural hair. I think I look better with my natural hair, but then, you know, once in a while you have to change the look, and yeah, that's why I wear artificial hair.
I think I like my natural hair like this, though it's a little bit of a style, a gentle style is what I normally do.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Pope Francis has pledged to give more than $500,000 for humanitarian aid in South Sudan. The Vatican made the announcement At a press conference today, reporter Josephine McKinnon was there. She tells VOA's Kim Louise why the Pope wants the world to put a greater focus on the people of South Sudan.
He feels that the world needs to wake up and be aware of what's going on there, the terrible humanitarian crisis that's affecting millions of people. And today, Cardinal Peter Turkson, who represents the Pope on peace and refugee issues, he held a press conference at the Vatican to announce that this money will be spent to finance two hospitals, a school, and farm equipment as well. And this is all about the Vatican and the Catholic Church wanting to show solidarity, but in particular, the Pope himself really wanting to put his stamp on this. And this whole effort is called the Pope for South Sudan. He wants to increase aid, increase awareness around the world so that governments increase aid, and also to find a peaceful solution to the ongoing conflict there. Now, Cardinal Turkson spoke about the conflict and the crisis, which he said is now affecting 7.3 million people, who he said were suffering daily from hunger.
Who else participated in this press conference?
We also had representation from Michelle Roy, the Secretary General of Caritas International, and he too spoke about the dire situation there. He said the numbers of people affected are huge and increasing by the day. He said there's a real risk that the famine will be worse than anything seen in the past. And he said really people are struggling to survive with their life. In 2017, Caritas and its support organizations plan to spend around $30 million bringing food to people there and helping them really to try and ease the malnutrition and stop people dying of hunger.
Was there any more mention of the Vatican, a delegation going to South Sudan in the near future?
As we know, Pope Francis was hoping to go to South Sudan later this year. That trip has been delayed, and Cardinal Turkson from the Vatican said himself that conditions had deteriorated so much. I imagine a reference there to the security situation, so that the Pope had to postpone that visit. Now, he had hoped to visit South Sudan in October to draw attention to the plight of the people in South Sudan, but it seems like that will have to be delayed now. So we don't know when the Pope will actually make it to that part of the world to raise awareness. But in the meantime, this money will be used to really try and help resolve people who are facing some pretty grave difficulties. And just today, Cardinal Turkson, for example, said that 1.5 million people had been forced to flee their villages because of war. There were massacres and atrocities happening all over the country, and too many women and children were subjected to daily violence, rape and abuse, as well as obviously men, women and children, other parts of the country also being affected by this terrible conflict. Now, as part of this campaign, the Vatican and its partners want to promote a hashtag called hashtag South Sudan We Care. They were saying today at the press conference that this is designed to really get people talking about this crisis in order to put pressure on individual governments so that they will really look at their budgets and really take action and go beyond what is currently being given to deal with this terrible crisis. And it's not only about famine and conflict, but Cardinal Turkson stressed today that there is also a very serious risk of a cholera epidemic that is unprecedented in terms of its proportions because of what we're seeing there.
That was reporter Justin McKinnon speaking with VOA's Kim Louise from Rome. South Sudanese refugees in Uganda are calling on their leaders to resolve the conflict in the country. The refugees also want to be consulted and represented in peace-building initiatives, including the national dialogue. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Kampala.
Hundreds of South Sudanese women, youth and students sing Christian hymns at the start of the two-day forum in Ugandan capital Kampala, focused on the role of refugees in peace building and the challenges they face. The Society for Civil Development, the Organization for Women Development and Justice Africa organized the event in conjunction with World Refugees Day. Thomas Ball, a refugee in the Rhino camp in Uganda's West Nile region, fled Juba when fighting first broke out in December 2013. Between soldiers loyal to President Salva Kiir and those loyal to his former deputy, Riek Machar. Ball says refugees deserve to take part in initiatives aimed at restoring peace and stability in the country.
So the people of Rhino camps, what they are requesting is a peaceful settlement in South Sudan. Peaceful mean settlement in South Sudan will be the best solution of all this, so that we shall go back and enjoy our resources back home.
Ball says South Sudanese refugees living in Uganda have the right to be included in the dialogue.
I'm requesting the involvement of refugees in this dialogue so that they can take part. They can challenge those who are trying to fight for their interests. Because there will be another inclusive dialogue in Addis, so let the refugee be represented.
Ian Michael is another refugee from Rhino Camp. He says community leaders should be engaged in peace-building initiatives so as to promote peaceful coexistence among various South Sudanese communities living in refugee camps in northern Uganda.
And we need our work to go and engage our communities leaders so that they sanitize, they engage now the communities so that then they can live in peaceful coexistence.
Afia Joan is an urban refugee in Kampala. She wants JEMEC, the body responsible for monitoring implementation of the peace agreement, to ensure that women refugees in particular are invited to speak.
The JEMEC, through IGAD, our voices should go forward. We can't put our efforts to the drain. We can't waste our effort for nothing. We went to school as refugees. Our children are refugees. We are getting old women.
Rose Otieno, executive director of the Kampala-based Center for Conflict Resolution, says South Sudanese women can play an important role in ending the fighting in their country. She points to the example of women in Uganda's underdeveloped Karamoja region who played an important role during a civil disarmament exercise in that area.
The women in Karamoja actually were very instrumental during the time of disarmament in the country, because the women know. They have a lot of information. Women have information, even they have a lot of early warning. My brother Moses will agree on that. They have a lot of early warning signals. But sometimes, like the challenges have been made, they are not given the support or the encouragement, or even not listened to, or even if they are heard, nothing is done. So we need to build all this.
Otieno is encouraging all South Sudanese refugee women to work with IGAD partners and South Sudan's political leaders so they can one day achieve their dreams. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Kampala, Uganda.
In part two of our radio diary on refugees this week, young South Sudanese escort reporter Mungume Debs Rakarinj on a tour of Yoro Trading Center, a new area for shopping in northern Uganda's Rhino Camp. The young South Sudanese refugees tell Mungume while they miss home, they look forward to visiting this place and refer to the people here as their brothers.
So my host, Kok, and his friends have brought me to Euro Trading Center. And here, this is a place where they come and they grab a soda or some refreshments. And the shopkeeper, your name, sir?
I'm called Andrew Bernard, a resident of Euro Trading Center. These are my customers, the usual customers. So they've come here to take some of those soft drinks of mine. Yeah? So we just get to know each other because they were actually related to, nearer to each other. So these are my customers, daily customers, so they need to also to access things. So that's the circumstance which came into for us to know each other.
Thanks so much for talking to me. And so what are you going to give us? What do you have here in your shop?
I'm having a lot of soft drinks like Stink, which is carbonated there, and then Coca-Cola, Minute Maid, and among others. Which one do you want?
I will need a bottle of... give me Coca-Cola. And what do you take it?
I'm taking Navida. Is that one Mountain Dew?
And you?
Let him get the woman Merinda.
So why do you come to this place basically?
Basically, this place is for shopping. There are some of the things like sugar and what that he didn't mention. We always come here to get these things, the candles and what have you. Every time we come in the morning and then in the evening, we always come here to buy.
Yeah, but it seems as if you, these people know you. So do you sometimes spend more time here? Because I even found them playing cards and you immediately joined.
Yeah, exactly. We are like brothers now, the way we are staying here, because these guys have a lot of things. They have the playing card that we share. We have the football that we all come and watch here. Then we have these sodas and what have you. So this is like our trading center, and we all own it. So we always come here. Now we become even daily customers and, again, now brothers. So we call ourselves now by names, and we know ourselves.
So after here now, when you finish taking a drink, and what else do you do, gentlemen?
Now after taking our drink, we ask him to get for us the football. He can open for us the video hall. Then now we can watch the football highlights, maybe some news.
So shopkeeper Bernard, these gentlemen, how important are they to your business?
To business, actually a customer is first thing to be considered in business. They are extremely important to me. Like bringing their money to come and buy things here and just like that.
So besides getting fresh drinks, I'm told these guys also come here. This is where they come because there is available solar power, so they are able to come and charge their phones from this place. I think the rest of things, my hosts have already said it all. My name is Mugume Davis Rwakarinj, and I am in Yoro Trading Center in Arua, northern Uganda.
That report by Mugume Davis Rwakarinj, chatting with the young South Sudanese refugees in Rhino Camp, brings us to the end of our show for today. We now leave you with the music Homeless by the Kenyan Boys Choir.
Homeless.
We have been listening to Kenyan Boys Choir with the song Homeless. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you being with us here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.